Welcome to the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. On this podcast, you'll hear stories to encourage, inspire, and empower you to be the best healthcare advocate that you can be for yourself or for a loved one. The information provided in this podcast is not to be used for any medical advice. This is for information only and to support you in your journey. Please consult with your physician and medical team. In fact, share your favorite episode with your team and ask questions from that.
Have you or a loved one ever had a scar? Maybe not a big surgery. Maybe it's just been a tattoo or maybe even a piercing. Anything that disrupts the skin can affect you someplace else in your body. You don't believe me? Listen to Jennifer as she tells the science behind neurokinetic therapy. Welcome to the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. Today on the podcast, we're going to be speaking with Jennifer Melisson. She is a doctor of physical therapy. She owns her own physical therapy clinic in the Dallas, Texas area. It's called Cedar Physical Therapy and Wellness. It is a concierge practice, and she specializes in scar work. And we'll have Jennifer introduce herself the rest of the way. Jennifer, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So if you can just get started and tell us a little bit more about yourself, who you are, what your interests are, and we'll go from there.
Sure. I am a Cajun girl from Lafayette, Louisiana, that has found myself in Texas for round two. I've lived all over the South for most of my life and have also done some traveling internationally, and really enjoy traveling and being in the outdoors, hiking and camping and things like that.
Fun. Today on the podcast, what topic would you like to discuss regarding healthcare advocacy?
I would like to let people know that they may have another option to consider when thinking about chronic pain. If they've ever had a surgery in the past, that chronic pain may actually be linked to the scar. So that way folks know that there might be more help out there for them.
Great. So yeah, so the patients have a surgery to fix a problem, but then afterwards they're find that they are experiencing even more pain or a different type of pain and kind of wondering what that might be from. Well, that's a wonderful topic. Yeah, let's go. Dive in.
Yeah. So motor control, how our brain chooses to use our muscles, is driven by sensory information, the information the brain gets from all the receptors in your skin. And your skin and your brain are connected in very early development. They come from the same layer. So our brain and our skins communicate and talk to each other all the time. And when you have changes to your skin, whether it's you have an incision, a surgery, a cut, a childhood scraped knee, a burn, a piercing, or a tattoo, any type of trauma where the skin is broken and has to heal, those receptors in the skin get damaged. And then they give the brain a different set of information as input. So then your brain chooses to use your muscles differently in response to that. Because your brain's number one job is to keep you safe, and then two is to keep you functional and moving. So it's amazing all the ways your brain will borrow from Peter to pay Paul with muscles all over your body. And so you could end up having pain in, you know, body parts that are far away from where you had the original surgery or skin trauma. So it's pretty interesting stuff.
That is very interesting and probably pretty confusing and frustrating as a patient who doesn't understand the science behind it, or even as a clinician, because a lot of the stuff that you're talking about wasn't exactly explained to us in school.
You're exactly right. It was not. I didn't learn this information until about 3 years ago when I took this weekend continuing education course called neurokinetic therapy. And it completely blew my mind. over and over and over and changed the way I thought about everything. So I was at that point going back and having to rethink 5 years of clinical practice and 3 years of school, and how even when I was working in an outpatient ortho clinic, that all of these patients do have a neuro component because of the brain muscle connection. So yeah, I really wish students in PT school would be taught more about this, because it would really change the way you think about a lot of things, and you can help people in a different way.
I agree 100%. I've just personally have come on the same journey, using the same theory that you're talking about, but linking it to not only motor control, but emotional regulation and, you know, our behaviors and
absolutely
everything. Like in what you mentioned about the brain's main job is to keep us safe and then to be functional. Well, I have come to learn that you can't do both at the same time. So you either are choosing keep yourself safe or protect yourself, or you're choosing growth and moving forward.
Absolutely. Yes.
So tell us a little bit more about how this applies to, like, maybe a friend of yours who, or a mom, or a, you know, a relative who maybe just had a surgery and now is trying to figure this out, or very frustrated with that their outcomes weren't exactly what they wanted.
Sure. I'll give you an example. This example is many people. I see it quite often. Say a lady has to have a C-section, and whether it be planned or unplanned, that's still a really, really traumatic event to have your body sliced open and your baby pulled out of you, and you're thinking about your safety and the safety of the baby. And especially if it's in an emergency situation, you can imagine the level of fear and uncertainty and worry and anxiety that could be present there. And then they enter motherhood, you know, trying to just keep up with all the demands of keeping a child alive and healthy and trying to make sure they're okay and their mental health is okay. And then when I end up usually seeing them, it's years later and they come to me and they're like, I have got back pain and I'm exercising and my back pain will not go away. And I don't know what to do. And it hurts to pick up my kids, and it hurts to, I can't work out because I work out and then I hurt so badly, and they just don't know what to do.
Right.
And so then we get into the evaluation process, and I do a really simple thing where I take two fingers and I try to push them over from all directions, and I tell them to be a cement pole and not to let me push them over. And usually with two fingers, I can make them topple over in at least three of the four directions most times, because their brain can't find their core muscles. And then I'm like, put your hand over your scar. So they do, and then I push them over again, and they're solid as can be. I cannot push them over, even if I push as hard as I can. And they're like, wow. So that's how I'm able to show them, like, look, there's a connection. Like, you changed the sensory input. Your brain got a different picture of what was going on when your hand was on your scar. And it's like, oh, I can find the core now. So they have that stability, and that way we can start to work through getting that scar to move and all the muscles turn back on that the brain has lost its good signal with. But on the emotional aspect, a lot of ladies may end up becoming emotional or crying on the table while we're working on this, because I'm touching their scar and their brain goes right back to that traumatic event. And so we're like, you know, it's okay. Like, let those emotions out. Like, give your brain permission to release the trauma it's holding onto in the scar, and let your other muscles come back on. So yeah, definitely a big physical and emotional component.
Yes, that might be hard for some people to understand how those two things are linked. Or what do you encounter, people who are resistant to coming to terms that this is all related?
Usually once I can show them that there's a connection in their body and they see it, they're pretty open to feel better. Mm-hmm. And can understand, because once I talk them through it, I'm like, look, like there was all this trauma associated with this. And if you haven't fully dealt with it, like your brain holds on to trauma and scars. It has a long memory. And sometimes I'll end up, you know, recommending people like, you know, seek out a counselor or to help them work through that if they're having a hard time processing it themselves.
Right. That's so important. So I think you're doing a really good thing here of one, identifying that there is a connection, two, understanding your limits as a physical therapist, like you are not right. a psychologist, but that doesn't mean that you can't address some psychological issues. Like it frustrates me in the medical profession today that we live in these silos, that I'm the physical right. therapist and I'm going to do stuff with your body and your legs because the OTs are going to deal with your arms. And then you have your doctor who does his or her thing. And then you have the psychological profession. Like I understand that I'm not those other professions, but I love what you're doing in acknowledging the person as a whole being and being able to kind of take off your PT only hat or be able to recognize that we are more than just muscles and nerves and joints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's wonderful to hear you have that perspective and great for the Dallas area to have such a integrative therapist. I love it.
Thank you.
Do you do any sort of telehealth?
This time I don't do telehealth because what I do is so hands-on and specific to each person that it doesn't really lend to telehealth.
Maybe not. We can have that conversation a different
time. Sure. I would love to hear more if you...
I'm a big proponent of teletherapy, particularly, I mean, Texas is a humongous state. And, you know, telehealth would be a way that you might be able to reach other people if we could think of some outside the box things for you, which I have some ideas, but awesome. That's another day. So thinking about the current healthcare system, our current healthcare model, what needs to change to help kind of get this information out to more people or improve access, or what do you think needs to be different?
The information has got to get out. That is the biggest thing, because often find that people after surgeries like aren't even taught the basics of how to start to gently work on their scar at an appropriate time for mobility, and even that very basic thing goes a really long way. And then if I can kind of on a mission to try to partner with surgeons and educate them about although they did amazing, beautiful work right there, that there could be some potential down the line issues that these folks face that a little education up front could, you know, spare these people a lot of pain and suffering down the road, oftentimes if it's just appropriately dealt with in the beginning.
Yeah, I think that's a super big part of this, that doctors too, for all the knowledge that they have, especially in a particular sense, especially like surgery, they really aren't getting a lot of pain education or understanding how the pain, the different mechanisms of pain work. That's my experience. Is that what you're finding as well?
I haven't really had many in-depth conversations with doctors specifically about that, but the practitioners that I have talked with, usually they're like pretty like, that's interesting what you're doing. And once we talk about it, they're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I never thought about it that way. And then there are some of them who are like, oh yeah, yeah, that's right. That totally makes sense. So
yeah. Well, at least you're getting some receptivity from them, and I think that's wonderful to be able to reach out to the people who are actually performing these surgeries and operations to help just give them a different perspective. So what's one thing that someone who had a surgery or some sort of trauma to the skin can do to kind of help maybe prevent this future pain that you're talking about?
To work on your scar by gently massaging it and trying to get the skin to move in all directions and not let adhesions and restrictions build up in the connective tissue, the fascia that's underneath the skin.
Right. So is, you mentioned a specific timeline. I know that you're not prescribing anything, but it, particularly after a surgery, is there a rough estimate of how much time we need to wait for the healing of the scar to take place before we can start mobilizing?
I usually like to be on the safe side and make sure that the incision is completely healed and it's not open in any way before I start gently. So giving a rough timeline, I usually see between 4 to 5 weeks is about when I've seen oftentimes I'll start gentle work.
Right. So once that wound closes, I mean, if you're just looking at a home care OASIS assessment, they're considering that that wound no longer a surgical wound after 30 days after it's been closed. So we could look at that 30-day mark once the whole incision is together, no open areas, and then obviously talking with your doctor of what's appropriate. But that's a good starting point for people. And massage or touching that, and you said all directions, so the scar really doesn't move at all. Like, I don't know how you would massage this. It's just so stiff and fibrous. What would you tell somebody?
I would educate them on how to do very gentle myofascial release to find a direction the skin doesn't move and apply a couple ounces of pressure into the stuck direction. And then be very patient. Myofascial release is a low and slow game and a patience game. And then just wait until your hand literally slides away from the scar. Don't push your hand away. And to just keep working at it, because I call scars projects. Mm-hmm. I tell people, this is a project we're going to have to keep working on, even if it's years and years later, which is often what I see, that it's a project.
That's a really good way to look at it. It's a project. And how I explain myofascial release to my patients, I'll say, you know, like, if you're going for a massage, the person who's doing the massage, or if you're the one doing the massage, you're like actively doing something to the body, as opposed to myofascial release, we're applying this pressure, this heat and pressure, and we're waiting for the body to respond to that. So it's a kind of a different way of thinking about, like, somebody like manipulating your tissues versus waiting for the tissues to release.
Respond.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Great education for our audience members. Anything else that a person who has some sort of skin trauma should be considering, or maybe even down the road, what are some of the symptoms? You mentioned pain in other parts of the body. What would clue somebody in that it may be related to an old injury, to a scar or something?
So if we stick with our C-section example for continuity, oftentimes they might come in and say, I have back pain, I have shoulder pain, I have neck pain, I have hip pain. And your core is the stable base that everything else moves from. So if your brain cannot find its stability in the core, then eventually all the arms and legs and the head and neck are going to suffer because they don't have a stable base to work from. So that's how I usually explain that to people.
Right. That makes
sense. It might hurt more peripherally, but the origin may be because your brain can't find your core muscles because of a scar or a tattoo or a piercing, even something as simple as I had my belly button pierced when I was a teenager. Or I had an appendectomy, or I had my gallbladder taken out. Something as small as like a laparoscopic or robotic surgery scar can have just as big as an effect as a large scar.
That's interesting thought too. I guess I have not thought about that as much, that even a very small scar or a piercing could have an impact. What about people who don't have pain? like, why would one person have pain and their brain and skin respond this way and somebody else doesn't?
I cannot specifically answer that, but I think if I take a shot at it, I think it has a lot to do with a lot of things. Like, it might be physical activity, or it might be that they, you know, are really active, or they're more psychosocial factors that could affect that, or emotional factors, or they don't have pain yet because their their body's doing a good job compensating, and the muscles it's compensating with haven't reached their limit of, like, I can't be all these other muscles and be me and do my job yet. So they're hanging in there because, you know, a common thing I see is the diaphragm overworks so much because people hold their breath all the time to substitute for a core that doesn't fire properly. So they think they're fine, but they walk around through life holding their breath all the time.
Right.
And then I see that so often. And then I lay them down on the table and I'm feeling their rib cage to see if it's in the proper position and even. And oftentimes the rib cage is way raised up and it may even be pulled out to one side or the other because their brain's overusing their diaphragm so much. Their rib cage is getting pulled out of place.
Right. So. Yeah, that's interesting to think about it that way. But especially from a myofascial layer, I mean, the whole adage of our knee bone is connected to our thigh bone is, I mean, that's essentially what it is. This fascial tissue connects all of us. And it's, I describe it kind of as like if I had a tight sweater on and I bunched up or had a, you know, kind of a tight spot in the sweater, it's going to stretch out everything. Yeah, not just where that area is. So kind of trying to help people understand these analogies. And the stability one too, again, I've not thought about it the way you're describing, but I use this example all the time. And I think it is the same. Like, I'll say in gym class, how can you perform your sit-up better? When somebody's sitting on your feet or without? And what is that person who's sitting on your feet, what are they doing? Are they giving you strength?
No, they're just anchoring you.
Yeah, they're giving you stability. But if you can't create that stability yourself, for whatever reason, in your case, a scar, you can't access the strength that you have.
Right.
So, you know, and that's something that I say to my pediatric patients and their families all the time. But I think it's curious how it's playing into this conversation as well. So thank you for broadening my perspective on this.
You're welcome.
Wonderful. Well, before we move on to the last question, is there anything else you wanted to share with our audience about scar management or education about scar mobilization?
Yeah, just two things. One is that, and a really good thing to do initially is to work on desensitization because your brain is sending all these pain signals to that area after trauma. So some things you can do with household items are like to rub around and over the scar. This is once it's closed, of course, very gently with like fabrics of different texture, like washcloths, Q-tips, cotton balls. And it just helps your brain to not send and hold on to all those pain signals. And the other really cool thing you can do with scars is kinesiotaping. There are several different techniques to help with scar mobility. And that's cool because your brain is going to be thinking about that scar and it moving in different directions, even when you're not thinking about it. So that's a pretty good thing, especially for those scars that are going to be longer term projects. Because as long as your skin tolerates it, you know, you can leave the tape on for several days. You know, give yourself a day, make sure your skin's clean and is doing okay, and then retape. So it's another good home management strategy if you've been instructed on how to properly do it.
Right. I think that's great. And finding a physical therapist who understands kinesiotape or understands scar management is so important. And, you know, Jennifer is definitely one resource. Is there any sort of like I don't know, national organization that might have other therapists on there who have this training that you do, or where would you?
Yes. This is called neurokinetic therapy. And if you go to www.neurokinetictherapy.com, there is a click button and a tab that says something to the effect of find a practitioner near me. So you can put in your city or your zip code in a mile radius, and it'll pull up practitioners that are in your area that you might reach out to. They might not be, they may be a physical therapist, but they might also be a yoga therapist or a personal trainer or massage therapist who's taken the class. So, but they could definitely help you out with that issue as well.
Wonderful. Thank you for that resource. And you said you had a second thing to let us know besides desensitization.
Yeah, it was the taping.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Fantastic. Wasn't sure if that was together. I agree with that. Kinesio taping has so many different applications, and scar management and swelling is one of, you know, two definite applications that I find quite helpful. So Jennifer, what do you do to take care of yourself while you're trying to take care of everybody else?
This is something I'm actively working on. So I've been on a health journey this year, so working on some detox things and getting my health back in better order so I feel better. But I'm trying to make time to exercise because I really enjoy exercise, and my body feels so much better when I lift heavy weights.
Okay.
So I'm working on building that back into my routine now that I'm feeling a little better and up to it.
That's super. I think you mentioned that your body likes to lift heavy weights. So that, again, is kind of a sensory need, but
it is.
Yeah.
I like the joint compression and the proprioception, and yes.
Yeah.
So my body craves it.
Yeah. So super that I have identified that. And, you know, we talk about people kind of finding their right form of exercise, and you know, you can look at research that says, you know, this exercise is best for X, Y, and Z. But I think when it comes down to it, the best exercise for you is one, the exercise you're going to actually do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And two, I mean, something that, like you said, you know, makes you feel good. So there's so many different types and forms of exercise, and great that you have identified for you something that helps you feel good, and that you've identified that this is a priority for you. I really love it when I have practitioners who come on and say that this is something that they're working on, because it's true. We don't, even though this is what we are promoting as professionals, we also need work and need
right,
to
exactly.
take time out and kind of practice what we preach as far as, you know, doing these things. And sometimes it is easier said than done, but I think from a patient perspective, it's healthy to see that we also have these journeys that we have to go on, that we're not perfect beings.
Right.
It is a process. And
we're human too.
yeah, exactly. So to acknowledging that in yourself and having a plan to work on things, is just part of the process. So, all right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Jennifer. This was a very enlightening conversation. And I hope that the viewers in the audience here today, or listeners, gain something from it, because thinking about across your lifespan, you know, whether it is a piercing, a tattoo, a minor surgery, I think most of us have had experiences like that. And if we're dealing with kind of a pain that nobody else can understand, that nothing else seems to work or kind of make sense, this makes sense. And we can kind of start looking at how we can begin to mobilize or desensitize that skin and make new connections between our skin and our brain. So thank you so much for joining us. And I think we should probably talk in the future again about more about this neurokinetic therapy. So I'd love to have you on again.
Thank you so much for having me, Christine.
All right.
Enjoyed it.
Wonderful. You guys have a great day.
I wanted to tell you all about a volunteer organization that I started about 6 weeks ago. It's called Nightlight Inpatient Parent Support, and it is a phone hotline for parents who are in the hospital with their kiddos, either after a surgery or maybe in the NICU or just with an illness. And parents who are staying in the hospital with their kids feel alone. They feel like it is such a dark time. There really isn't anybody that they can talk to. Even other parents who are in the hospital at the same time with them really just keep to themselves because everybody's dealing with so much. But all these parents want is connection. So I started, with the help of Kristen Parsons, a volunteer organization, and we are looking for volunteers. We are also looking for donations. Right now we're not a 501(c)(3) nonprofit. We're just doing this kind of on our own right now. But one of the ways that I'm going to get donations is via this podcast. So I want as many listeners as I can get on this podcast. So let me know what information you want to hear about healthcare advocacy. Please share this podcast out on social media. You'll be doing myself and families a big favor to get this into hospitals across the nation. So again, Nightlight Inpatient Parent Support. We're looking for volunteers to be part of our phone bank. If you need some support, you can definitely reach out to me and I'll have the link to the phone number for the phone bank. Thank you. Hey there, it's Christine from the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. Would you like to be featured on this podcast and share your healthcare advocacy story? Then sign up on the Sign Up Genius link under the description of this podcast, and we'll talk soon.